All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report, and now shifting the focus over to the energy sector as I'm chatting with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. Also writes the Ion Energy Report, which is a free report more covering the macro data for the oil and natural gas sector. As a quick note, Joseph is running a special discount for the annual membership of the Schachter Energy Report. This is the best offer of the year. It is $150 off the annual subscription. I'll post a link in the show notes so all of you can find out more of those details. Joseph, I just got back from your energy conference. It happened last weekend on Saturday. I think it was my fourth or fifth year out there. I had a chance to sit down with a handful of some of the oil and natural gas companies that were exhibiting at the conference. I am releasing those interviews throughout last week and into next week. So again, thank you for putting on that conference. I know you're going to be doing it again next year, but let's just recap that conference. There were a lot of companies there. You gave a keynote speech to kick off the conference and hosted a natural gas panel at the end of the conference. Give us a bit of a rundown of what stood out to you, please.
Sure. The word of mouth is getting out that we have, really high quality companies, from the biggest being Tourmaline to some others like 2,000 BOEs a day, like Southern Energy. So the word is getting out that we have, a lovely mix of companies on the E&P side, domestic, international service. We had one royalty trust company there, and the word has gotten out about the conference and of the quality of it. And the facility at MRU is fabulous. Last year we had the premier open the conference. This year we were fortunate to have our energy minister, Brian Jean, open the conference. And then I did my macro speech, where we are on the energy super cycle, which had full attendance in the Bella Hall at the MRU, Mount Royal University. And then at the end of the day, as you mentioned, we had an LNG panel, natural gas panel, and that was because we're having LNG Canada in the months ahead, bringing on the first West Coast of Canada LNG export terminal. And that's going to take, 1.9 to 2.1 BCF a day out of the Western Canadian basin, which will be a nice shot in the arm to the natural gas producers. We had, 40 companies presenting. We had over 700 attendees. That's up from 640 last year. Most of the rooms were full. We even had signage up when we were at capacity in a large number of those rooms. So it was really a very, very productive day. We also had six companies from the not only the energy industry of today, but of the energy industry of tomorrow, which is the TMX inviting companies in clean tech, renewable, and critical minerals. And we had a number of lithium companies, and we had one company in the uranium side. So that side of the program also was pretty good. So all in all, a very successful day. And, we have some good ideas, and we're talking to people about improvement. People love the food. They love the atmosphere. They love the parking. So all in all, very successful. And we plan to build on that for our 2025 program, which is, once you finish this, you get a month or two off. And then in February, March, we start all over again.
Yeah, start planning for next year. It was fun to go to that conference, Joseph. The one thing that I really like about the conference is the focus on companies. There is the speeches from you and some of the other special guests, but it is company focused. So let me ask you, any companies that stood out to you? Where should we be shifting our focus for oil and natural gas companies?
Well, if we look at companies that are Canadian domiciled, names like, Tourmaline, Surge, Obsidian, Yangara, Petrus, Saturn, on NuVista and Advantage were probably names to look at. And then on the names on the international, Valeura Energy, Gran Tierra, Touchstone kind of drew a lot of attention. And then on the service sector, TotalEnergies, Trican, STEP, and McCoy Global kind of drew a lot of attention. So we were very fortunate to have some very good support from the industry, and the individual investors got some great access to great companies. And so depending upon what you want in your portfolio, the mix you want in your portfolio, we try to have a lot of bases covered with the companies we invite. And again, we were fortunate to have that this year. And again, next year we might be able to, with the spacing, maybe go up to 45 companies and maybe push the count up to 750 from 700. So, we'll be talking to you sometime in September of next year about letting your audience know. So if they want to come to the conference, they'll be able to do that.
So, Joseph, one thing that I was noticing with a lot of these companies, and it's been a trend from the last couple of years, is that it does seem like a lot of the oil companies, especially with the oil price fairly stable this year, really for the last kind of year and a half, it's been stuck in a range. These companies are making money. They are returning value to shareholders. But I think a lot of them are still looking for growth. They are reinvesting back into their land packages. What's something in your eyes that investors should be focused on that will help? Let's focus on oil companies here, separate themselves from the rest of the crowd, which again, they are still broadly doing well at these, let's say, $70 oil prices.
Yeah, remember $70 oil times the Canadian dollar 1.38, that gets you a pretty healthy price. If you look at prices compared to last year, we're down about $10 Canadian versus last year. The big issue is natural gas, where we're down about $2 from last year. It was probably 275, and for the quarter it was probably 75, so it was pretty lousy Q3 of 2024. But again, once LNG Canada comes on, that should tighten up the spread, and we'll get better pricing that the industry can handle. So all in all, on the oil side, what I would be watching is you're going to have probably lower cash flows, but a lot of free cash flow will be generated. One, the companies are paying down debt. Once they're under 1x debt to cash flow, then a lot of them have said that they're going to go and spend 50% to 75% of that on a return to shareholders format. Some of it will be NCIB, some of it will be dividends, some only like NCIB, some only like dividends, and there's a lot of them in the middle that do both. So I think that you've got to decide what's important to your portfolio. Do you need income and capital gains, or do you want capital gains? And that's really the differentiator, using the NCIB or not. I like companies that do both. You get paid more than you'd get in the bank, 7-8% yields in many cases, and you have the growth opportunity in the those that are focused only on NC. Then you're looking for higher commodity prices, but with the crude oil down this week, the stocks have been weakening. So, and I think we're going to see during this period between now and the end of the year a lot of tax loss selling from mid-November to mid-December. And that's because energy stocks are down for the year for the most part. And if people made a lot of gains in technology and banking or other areas of the market, then of course the Canadian tax rates have gone up for capital gains. So you want to shelter it against your losers. And I think that from mid-November to mid-December, we're going to probably see a bit more pressure. And if we are below $68 WTI, I think we're going to see some fabulous bargains. And I think we'll be sending out another action alert buy with additional names and saying it's time now to go to whatever a fully invested position is for investors to go and make the appropriate decisions to take yourself to that weighting, depending upon, what you and your investment advisor recommend.
Let's talk about that debt component then. A lot of these companies have paid down debt. You mentioned that a lot, their goal is to get under 1x debt to cash flow. Well, it's a red flag if investors are looking at debt levels of companies. And what do you think is a healthy amount of debt for these companies to carry? Or simply, do you want to see them pay down pretty much all of their debt?
Well, no, I think debt is useful, especially if you're a high quality, high grade, and you can get debt with very little conditions on it. You don't have any secured debt. It's unsecured corporate debt and hopefully low interest rate. And that gives you some firepower to make acquisitions, to do other things. And, you see companies doing that, CNQ, with the purchase they just did from Chevron. We see that with Tourmaline buying Crew. So there's a lot of different ways for companies to use debt appropriately. But if you're over 1.5x debt to cash flow at these reduced cash flows because of the low natural gas price and the lower oil price, then you've got to focus on getting debt down and forget about shareholder returns. But once you are in that comfortable zone of under one time, then you can look at options for a near-term return to shareholders. And then the more important thing is continue to have a leg for growth. I like companies that have a growth leg and that you can see where the trajectory between now and the end of the decade is for a 30 to 50% bump up in volumes. And if you can see that from the facilities, from the inventory of drilling locations, that's where I would target my investment recommendations, is to go for the companies that, you know, depending upon if price is there, that they have the ability to grow materially.
Hey, I'm with you. A lot of investors like that growth component, but then how do you balance that out with dividends and those NCIBs, the share buybacks? A lot of the companies return capital to shareholders, but they also need to use that capital to put it back in the ground for growth. So what sort of ratio and balance do you like to see?
Well, I think once you're under one time, I'd like them to spend about a third of the balance sheet of the free funds flow growing the company, you know, anywhere between 5 to 8% compounded annually. Some years it may be, you know, much less, some years it may be more, but a 5 to 8% compound growth into the end of the decade, which means you've got to build the facilities, the gathering systems, all the infrastructure that needs to be in place has to be put in place. And then, of course, when you build a new facility, you want to fill it up as quickly as possible for the operating cost advantages. So that's really the issue there. I like companies when they're in good financial shape, paying a dividend at least equal to what you can get in the bank and your, you know, in T-bills. And the upside, you know, if they want to pay a higher dividend, you know, that kind of gives you stability on the downside of the stock, especially if you're paying a well-secured 7 or 8% dividend yield. You don't really have that much downside in the stock, you know, if you have that protection.
Let's talk about the divergence between the large companies to the small companies. It's something we are seeing in a lot of resource sectors and really across the markets, but the large oil producers, in my eyes, still seem to be doing quite well. The smaller ones that maybe have more of a growth component to them, they are still broadly lagging. It's something I continue to hear from some of those smaller companies, maybe sub $500 million, even a couple $100 million. They're saying they're just not getting the market love out there, but they said that they're following through on a lot of their initiatives. Do you see opportunity in these smaller companies, or is the play here to stick with the big guys, take those dividends and take that slow and steady growth?
Well, historically, that's what happens in the cycle, is the big money that wants to be in the biggest liquid names. So between the Americans wanting Suncor and CNQ and Cenovus, and then Tourmaline and Paramount. And then as more and more investors get more comfortable, then they start going down in size. And that's just normal part of the cycle. But if you look at the upside of the big names and you put the same cash flow multiple on the smaller names, you've got doubles and triples in front of you. So when people start going down in size to see the faster growth, or the fact that there's a massive discrepancy in valuation, then you see a big bounce up in the companies. And I think that's what you're going to see in 2025, 26, where there's going to be a big catch-up from these small and medium-sized companies because of the big discrepancy between the valuations being paid on the big boys by large investors on both sides of the border.
We talk a lot about this in the metals sector as well, and the question always is, what will make those investors go further down the food chain and try to take advantage of that discrepancy, that price discrepancy? Is it a commodity price base in your eyes? Is it oil and natural gas continuing to move higher? What other factors could draw that money to filter down?
Well, I think it's as investors and the large caps get comfortable with the sector and we get over $90 WTI, which I see happening in the second half of 2025 on a consistent basis. And then heading into 2026, I think we'll see spikes over 100. When that happens, they'll be looking for the torque. Where is the big upside in terms of cash flows? And all of a sudden they'll say, my God, these little, you know, smaller, medium companies are trading under 2x cash flow with significantly improved balance sheets and strong balance sheets in many cases, some paying decent dividends. And then all of a sudden they'll go down in terms of market cap. And then individual investors will jump on the board And people will start talking about exploration plays and these new wells coming on with with big numbers. And all of a sudden, once you get into that exploration focus, the juniors start really outperforming because they have the ability on just a few wells on one pad with two, three, four, five wells to really change their production schedule. And that wakes the street up and investors jump on board. And then you see big, big runs. And we saw that, in 1999 to 08, 2000, 2001 was big cap. And then 2002, 3, we started seeing the move into the smaller cap. And then by 2008, all of them were running as we went to 147, which was the summer of 2008 at the high. So, the front money is usually into the big caps. Then, as all of a sudden prices, are not seen to be short term, but they're consistently at a decent price and heading north, that's when people start jumping and going down market. And that's when we see these big runs. And, if you pull out most of the stock charts of any company that was in existence in 2000 to 2008 or 99 to 08, you'll see 10 baggers, 20 baggers. And I think that between now and the end of this decade, I see 5 and 10 baggers in a lot of places. And that's just assuming going from under 2 times cash flow to 8 or 9 times cash flow, going from PDP, proved developed producing reserves, to 2P valuation reserves. And then, of course, you add in the price increase in the commodity, which adds to cash flow and NAV. And then you add in volume growth, which also adds to cash flow and NAV. And you could be talking 5 baggers. And I look across the universe where we cover, and on the small and medium-sized companies, I see a lot of them that fit that bill.
Yeah, that rising commodity price also really helps that filter down of money. Let's talk about the underlying prices then, because oil, as I said, still at a reasonably healthy price, but quite frankly, the price has done nothing. It's been broadly stuck between, let's just round it off to about 70 to just over $80 a barrel outside of a couple price spikes. And it's been in that range through almost all of 2023 and 2024 now. Again, there's been a couple price spikes and price drops, but this has been a stable environment. One thing I continue to hear, though, is lower demand. Is this just seasonal in your eyes, Joseph, or is this a trend we need to understand that there just isn't that screaming demand that we see, that we have seen in the oil sector?
Well, historically, when you have a sluggish economy in the biggest consuming markets, like the United States is the biggest, and then China number two, China's down 300,000 barrels a day of consumption from last year. The US is flat versus last year, 20.2 million versus 20.17. So very similar numbers. This week, we had a decline of 446,000 to 20.25 from 20.7 the week before. And there was a build in inventories of 5.5 million in commercial reserves, and total stocks were up 6.7. So we had increases in storage, lower demand, and that's why we're down a buck today in the price of crude. So I think that between now and the start of winter, I think we have a couple, with tax loss selling and maybe prices coming down below 70 again, I think below 68 even, I think that will give us a low risk entry point, and we'll probably send out another action alert buy to our subscribers saying, look, the price of oil is down at bargain levels. Stocks have retreated because of tax loss selling. This is a great buying opportunity. We'll probably add additional new buy recommendations, and then we'll reiterate, going to our buy list and looking what fits your portfolio. But I think that this will be the buy signal where we have not said go to fully invested in a couple of years. We'll probably be saying that again. March, April 2020 was the last time we did that, and then we got into 21 and stocks really had run big. We suggested harvesting. So right now, I think this is going to be the next window coming up here in the coming weeks, and into mid-December, where we say it's time now to get to whatever is appropriate for you. Sit down with your investment advisor. What risk profile do you need? Dividend income? Do you want to buy utilities? Do you want to buy growth stories? Whatever is appropriate, service, et cetera, domestic, international, and take whatever that is and take it to a fully weighting for whatever is appropriate for each individual.
So is the oil sector on the downside, in your eyes, potentially susceptible to a longer term or more sustainable breakdown as either economies struggle around the world or focus switches more to the natural gas market and money rotates more in that direction?
Look, if there's a market correction of 15 to 20% and we're having a big down day today in the general market and it's related to some earnings disappointments and rising interest rates, the US yields have gone up sharply over the last month. So people are worried about inflation and, a debt overhang where there's a crowding out effect. So we're seeing the rising interest rates, weak earnings, which are not good for the stock market. If that brings down, continues, we're going to probably see a drag on the energy sector, and that will give us the buying opportunity. And so I think this is just a short-term phenomenon. I don't think we go much below 70 for very long. It usually spikes down because of, hedge funds shorting and, bad news on the EIA data or China data. But I think once we get into winter 2024-25, I think we're going to see improvements year over year. China's trying to pull out more and more stimulus to get their economy going. And again, once you get past this election, I think the uncertainty will be removed and we'll start seeing U.S. demand start picking up as well, depending upon which candidate and what they're supporting. They'll tell you should go for oil or gas or whatever. But I think the energy sector, because we're going to need more electricity, data centers and the whole infrastructure of electricity needs to be a lot of money spent on it. So copper will be in big demand and we'll need to expand potentially 50% or double the amount of electricity that's produced, and renewables can't do it on their own, that we're going to see more demand for cogen, especially natural gas, in a Democratic victory. And if it's a Republican victory, oil will see a much higher demand bounce simply because the industry will be told, drill and let's be an exporting powerhouse because we do have the basins to bring on more production in the years ahead.
So when it comes to natural gas, then look, everyone's focused on these LNG terminals. They are progressing. Yes, some have been delayed, but there are some of these coming online in the very near term. It's what I kept hearing at the conference too, is look at these terminals. This is going to cause price spikes. This is going to change the whole oversupply narrative that we hear in North America. Joseph, is that going to have the price spike that you think some of these companies and commentators are pointing to? And are there any other catalysts out there for natural gas outside of these LNG terminals?
Well, I think that I wouldn't call it a price spike. I'd say a price recovery, because the industry needs, $2 to $3 US or Canadian to be economic. And if you get cold weather, you get spikes to $4, $5, $6 in bad weather when you have big draws because of that cold weather. But if we can get a consistent price of, $2.5, $3.5 between now and the end of the decade, that would be very economic to the industry. And remember, it's not just the LNG. We'll have one new Canadian facility, LNG Canada. We're going to have announcements of more when they do FID. LNG Canada could go to train two and announce it. And then you've got a couple of new facilities coming on in the U.S. So that's going to increase exports. But as well, as I mentioned in our previous commentary, is that the demand for electricity is growing. So you're going to, for data centers and whatever. So the natural gas is going to be needed for cogen to create electricity. That's going to be a big incremental. And then, also the products that are created, the whole chemical product chain where you have as a feedstock, oil, all of that is going to see demand increases into the end of the decade.
All right. So then, Joseph, right now, I guess, waiting for another buy signal, are you going to be more focused on natural gas than oil, or is it going to come back to those oil companies, or even better, a company that has more a blend of both?
I think you want to be in both oil focused and natural gas focused. And that's what we've been doing with our portfolios. Also, we like the service sector, so we have names there. And we also like both international and domestic. We did a poll at the conference where we said, how many people own three or less? How many own four to seven names? How many people own eight or more? And the majority of the people owned in the higher numbers. So people are adding more and more names, adding diversification. And at the conference, they went to see the companies they owned and they went to see companies that they were interested in. So I think that, as people get more and more comfortable with the sector, because we're in an energy super cycle. We've only had two in my career before, 1974 to 81. Price of oil went from under $3 to 36. And then, of course, Volcker decided to slam down and beat up inflation. 99 to 08, we had a massive cycle because China went from, communism-controlled economy to communism political power, but capitalism for the economy. And the demand really took off on energy. And the price of crude went from, under $11 to 147 in the summer of 2008. This cycle, we were at 650 in March of 2020. And this super cycle is going to be by the emerging world bringing on copper, nickel, lithium, all the raw materials we're going to need for the new, world of bubbles. And so if we want EVs, we want batteries, for battery technology, you want solar panels on homes, you want to do all the things that are going to be more climate friendly. That's going to require a lot of money being spent in the emerging world to bring on the raw materials. And that, I think, is the driving force for the growth. If in our forecast that we showed at the conference, we see demand in the OECD coming down between now and the end of the decade, but we see much more growth in the non-OECD, bringing the demand from, let's say 102 million barrels a day, daily consumption on average in 2024, to potentially 108 million barrels a day by the end of the decade. And the industry is not spending enough money to bring that growth that's needed, at this point. So we need higher prices to incentivize the industry to spend and bring on that increased production that's going to be needed before the end of the decade.
That is true. We need that growth, right? That's always what draws in investors. And quite frankly, hey, that's what grows a sector. And that's what investors are looking for. Joseph, it's always a pleasure chatting with you again. Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. Click that link in the show notes to take advantage of Joseph's best offer of the year on an annual membership for $150 off. And please, everyone, be sure to go back through our website, kereport.com, and podcast. Search the KE Report in your podcast player to listen to all the daily editorials, company updates, and some of the company interviews that I recorded at Joseph's recent Catch the Energy Conference. Joseph, thank you for your time on this weekend show, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back with you next week.
Thanks.